Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Nun Bet and Aleph with the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Yitomim shesamchu etzel balabayit. Yitomim who are relying on a balabayit. Whether that is because they voluntarily went to this individual to be their guardian, or whether this individual voluntarily acts as their guardian. There's been no official appointment of this individual, but because of the relationship or because of the circumstances, this individual becomes a deemed guardian. Here, the extent of how much of a guardian he is questionable. Rashi says, "Afilu hachi kapitropusu," that even though there was no official appointment, he becomes like an apitropus, he becomes like a guardian, an executor of the estate that is appointed. Mishonim argue it to the level of responsibility and rights that he gains through this relationship, all the way up to those who believe that he is exactly like an apitropus. Oshemina lehem avien apitropus, or where there was an official appointment, where their father appointed an executor of the estate, chayav laaser perotehem. That individual is obligated to take off trumot ma'asrot from their produce. Apitropus shemineu avi yitomim ishava. An apitropus that was appointed by the father before he passed away, he must take a shvuah when he turns over the property and all the assets back to the yitomim. Mineu beitin lo yishava. On the other hand, if he's appointed by beitin, then he doesn't have to take a shvuah. Abba Shaul omer chiluf advarim. Abba Shaul says it's just the opposite way around. If he's appointed by the father, no shvuah. It's appointed by beitin, there is a shvuah. So now, what this Mishnah is doing here is because implicit in the Mishnah, what's not clear where, there is a tikkun olam. There is something that was done, the tikkun olam. Different Rishonim disagree about exactly what the tikkun olam is. Some suggest that's the first line of the Mishnah, which is the fact that you can be a deemed apitropus, and that's the tikkun olam, that Chazal granted that power to an individual who acts as a guardian, even though they were not officially appointed, that they're granted the powers of an apitropus. That's the tikkun olam. Some suggest that the tikkun olam has to do with the ma'asrot, which we'll see in more detail in the Gemara. Some say it is the fact that they have to take off trumot ma'asrot, and some say that it is the fact that they don't have to take off trumot ma'asrot in certain instances. And the last piece over here, which is the shvuah, that possibly also could be a tikkun olam, which is that Chazal wanted the executor at the end to give a din v'cheshbon about what he did with the materials and the assets of the Yitomim, and they force him to take a shvuah to substantiate his actions and to make sure that they're not preying on the assets of the Yitomim. So that shvuah would be for a tikkun olam. Now, whether you have a shvuah or not, it seems like you'd still have to present an accounting at the end. The question of the shvuah is just a way to reinforce the accounting when you return the assets, that you get a list of the assets or of the estate when you take it over, and then they have to give a reckoning to the Yitomim when they hand it back. Question of whether he has to take a shvuah is part of that tikkun olam to reinforce or to ensure that the individual did act honestly. And where we don't have a shvuah might also be for tikkun olam, because we'll see the reason in the Gemara is that people will opt not to be executors if we force them to take a shvuah. So those are possibilities as to what the tikkun olam is in the Mishnah. Viraminu, is it really possible for an apitropus to act on behalf of the Yitomim to separate Trumot Masrot? We have from the Parsha of Trumot, Atem Velo Shutafim, you and not partners, Atem Velo Arisin, you and not sharecroppers, Atem Velo Apitropin, you are not executors of the estates. V'lo atorim et she'enu shelo, or probably the girsa should be also again here, atem v'lo atorim et she'enu shelo. Depends on how you read it. Rashi gives two ways to read it. Either this last line is an explanation for all those things before, which is the reason that none of those work is because you're not allowed to be torim on someone else's produce. You can't take off trumot ma'asrot on behalf of someone else without their permission, without their making a shliach. So that last line could be an explanation for everything in the Braita, or it could be another item in the Braita, which is Atem, Velo Atorim, et she'enu shelo, and then Rashi said that it would be Zo, ve'ein tzarich lomar zo, tani. This is Asur, and you don't even have to tell me about the other case. Because as a Shutaf, You have the most ownership inside of this produce, and yet you're still not allowed to take off Trumot Masrot without the permission of the other partner. And then a sharecropper who has less ownership in the field. And then an Apitropin who has the least ownership here. And then when it's Einu Shelo, which is complete disconnection from the produce. So it's a zo, ve'ein tzarich lomar zo. Not only is this problematic, but even the more obvious case is problematic, where you are not allowed to exercise the right of separating out Trumot and Masrot because you're not the owner and you don't have permission of the owner. But you see clearly here from the Braita, atem below Apitropin, yet in our Mishnah it says that Apitropis chayav laser peruteim. Amar Rav Chista, lokasho, that's not a problem. Kan la'achil, kan la'aniach. Depends what he's doing it for. If it's for the purpose of the Yitomim eating it, then he's allowed to take off Trumot and Masrot, either in order to raise money to feed the Yitomim, or literally to feed the Yitomim, that they shouldn't have produce that is Tevel, and they should eat stuff that is Me'usar, and that has all the proper Trumot and Masrot taken off of it. On the other hand, La'aniach, if it's to be left over, meaning that it's for the general assets of the estate, there we do not allow him to do it. Now the question is, what power does the Apitropos have to do this? So many Rishonim believe that this comes from Hefker Beit Din Hefker, that even though Min Hadin, an Apitropos cannot separate out Trumot Masrot because he's not a sufficient owner in the item, so he couldn't do it, Beit Din nevertheless empowered him to do it, Mipnei Tikkun Olam. That Tikkun Olam is that Hefker Beit Din Hefker gives him the right to take off Trumot Masrot on a limited scale in the places where it's absolutely needed, which is in a case where he's trying to provide food for the Yitomim, and he wants them to eat stuff that is not Tevel. On the other hand, there are Rishonim that follow the Ramban, who believes over here that the reason that the Apitropos is allowed to do this is Mishum Zchia, which we've seen before in the Masechta, that Zochin Shadam Shelo Befanav, that you can do something that is a Zchut for an individual. Over here, the Hafrashat Trumot Masrot is a Zchut for the Yitomim, because they need to separate them in order to eat it, and his separation of the Trumot Masrot is to their benefit. And therefore, the Apitropos is acting out of Zchia, and that is true, we're going to see, in a number of items that the Braita is about to bring, that all of these items, why he's allowed to act on their behalf, is not because of Hefker Beit Din Hefker, like the other Rishonim say, but rather because of Zchia. And in that case, the Tikkun Olam is what he can't do. Because he should be able to take off Trumot Masrot on everything. He should be able to take any transaction for the Yitomim. But Chazal limited the transactions that he can engage in, and that's the Tikkun Olam, that we only allow him to do it for the Hachil, but not La'aniach. The reason why Rashi says is, Shema Iganvu, maybe they'll get stolen. Meaning that as long as something is produce or is land, it's very hard to steal that item, and that will remain an asset for the Yitomim. The other hand, if he converts that to cash and monetizes that, then you have to store the money somewhere. In their day, there weren't banks to store your money in. It wasn't easy to protect cash. And therefore, it's at risk of being stolen or at risk of being lost, taken, spent. So that is a risk to the Yitomim that maybe we don't want you to undertake because of the fact that that asset can walk away. Inami, Rashi says, is Mishum Shevach Beit Avien Noi V'Chavod Hu Lahem. This is a concept that we see in many places in Shas, which is that there's a certain amount of prestige that is associated with the family, and that prestige has to do with the land that they own, the produce that they have, the servants that work for them, the house that they live in, and sometimes we will make decisions that are not necessarily as halachically clear as we'd want because of Shevach Beit Abimun, that we want to maintain the certain amount of familial prestige or honor that is associated with these items, or the legacy of their family. It's a heirloom of the family, something to that effect, which would prevent us from engaging in too many items and monetizing everything that is there. Now, in each of these cases, if the Apitropos gets specific permission from Beit Din, we would allow them to do that, especially in a case where they're protecting the assets from deteriorating or being lost. I mean, that it's to the benefit of the Yitomim, but there you'd have to get special permission. It's not governed by the general permission granted the Apitropos to act on behalf of the Yitomim. So that's the way that Rav Chista solves this stira, as to when you're allowed to take off Trumot Masorot and when you're not allowed to take off Trumot Masorot. Vatanya, Vatanya here is Vinichuta in support of this distinction that is being drawn. Hapitropim, Tomim, Umasrim, Lachio, Balolaniach. The Hapitropim can take off Trumot Masorot in order to feed, to provide the immediate needs of the Yatomim, but not for their long-range needs. Now that means either he can't do anything with it, or some suggest that he can sell it to buyers without taking off the Trumot and Masrot and say, you must take off the Trumot and Masrot. It's a question of how much is the limitation. It might have to do with what Rashi said before, the reason for it. If the reason is Gneva, we might not let you sell it at all. If the reason is Shevach Beit Avuhon, then there might be other consideration as to why you would sell it here, even though you're not taking off the Trumot and Masrot. Umochrim lehem behema avadim ushfachot badim patim sadot vikramim la'achil. You're allowed to sell on their behalf liquidated assets, animals, servants, maidservants, houses, fields, vineyards, in order for them to eat. I mean, if this is part of their basic needs and their provisions that they need immediately, you're allowed to transact in the assets of the estate to provide them the needs that they have. Avalo le'aniach. But you can't do that for long-ranging assets of the estate, meaning that if they need something for the long term, we don't allow you to sell. It's all for immediate needs. Umochrim lehen peirot, yenot, shmanim, v'siltot, v'achil, v'lo laniach. Once again, you can sell their fruits, their wines, their oils, their flour, in order to provide their immediate needs, but not again for long term, in order to raise assets for them or money for them. You can't do that. Now, obviously, if things are rotting or going bad, then you need to sell it. Then it would make sense to sell it then. But if it's things that store over the long term and there's no risk to the assets, we prefer that you keep it here. Again, it seems to be because of Shevach Beit Avuhon. These are the items of the household. These are things that have a certain sentimental value as well as the honor of the family. And therefore, we don't want you transacting in them. Aside from the fact that we also don't want you losing money for them. You're allowed to do or perform these mitzvot for them, not you perform, but you're allowed to purchase them the objects which will allow them to perform this mitzvah, which is you can buy them a lulav, aravot for Oshana Rabba, make them a sukkah, tzitzit to wear. Anything that is a limited, quantifiable expense. To include a shofar. Now, many describe here that all these mitzvot have a chiddush in them, which is that you don't necessarily need to buy them or to have them on your own in order to be yotzei the mitzvah. You don't need a shofar to be yotzei the mitzvah of shofar because it's something that's done b'tzibur generally and someone blows the shofar. You can sit in someone else's sukkah. You don't need your own sukkah. You can borrow someone else's ulav, aside from the first day. Same with the arava. Tzitzit or chovata beged, not chovata gavra. So all of these are items that you wouldn't necessarily have to do, yet the Apitropos is given permission to do it. These aren't for their physical needs. Maybe this is, we'll call it a ha-chil of a spiritual nature, which is that to do these basic mitzvot, we allow them to purchase, again, things that have limited expenses and are not large expenditures that will wipe out the estate. Then you're allowed to do this. Again, even though there's a chiddush here that they're not necessary, but these are nice items or basic items that people would engage in and have for mitzvot, and therefore we allow them to do it. Lochim lehem sefer Torah, tefillin u'mezuzot. Now again, with tefillin and mezuzot, it makes sense because these are items that they're going to utilize. Again, even though they could borrow these items, sefer Torah, despite the large expenditure, we will allow you to buy them a sefer Torah. This is a basic item that you would expect to find in a household. I mean, today it's the same thing as having a sitter and chumashim, sfarim that are there. That's a similar thing to having a sefer Torah in their day. Again, anything that is quantifiable and has limits to it, you can purchase on their behalf. Latuya migilah, to include that they should also have a migilah. Vein poskim aleihem tzedaka, vein podim aleihem et hashvuim. They cannot give charity, and you cannot be a part of the pools to redeem captives. Now, in both of these cases, these are very big mitzvot, and these are very important mitzvot. Despite that fact, we don't allow you to engage them because they are limitless. They aren't items that have any fixed amount. You can't tell me how much tzedakah to give or how much to give towards binyon shvuim. And that makes it impossible if they're participants in these items. How do you know which is, how much is enough? and how much is too much. And so because of that, we don't want to give that to the apitropos to make that decision. But lo kol davar she'en lo kitzvah. Anything that is not quantifiable and limited, we won't let you engage in that mitzvah. Latuye tanchumei avelim. As well as these are other items that are less defined. We're doing the tanchumei avelim and providing food and whatever items that the avel needs. These are now, again, not mitzvot that are finite in their nature. And therefore, we won't allow the apitropos to go on behalf of the yitomim and spend that money because he could waste away all the assets of the estate. He can always say, I'm doing staka, I'm doing this, and be benevolent and generous at the expense of the yitomim, which we don't want. Vein apitropin reshayin ladun lachov uliskot benichsei yitomim. So he's not allowed to adjudicate cases not to their detriment, not to their benefit, with the nichsei yitomim. The Gemara interjects here and says, "Lischot amaylo." If it's to their benefit, why can't he engage for them? Ela lachov amanat liskot b'nichsei yitomim. That's a case where it would be a chov in order to be lischot a yitomim. The way that Rashi describes it over here, it's a case where it possibly could go in your favor, possibly could not go in your favor. You entered into the adjudication process or their defense in order to be a zchut for their benefit. But it turns out that it didn't go your way, and it now becomes a chov. So we tell you, don't get engaged, even in items that are l'zchut ha-yitomim, because it might result in the other outcome, which is a chov, which you're not allowed to do. And therefore, we try to avoid any type of adjudication on behalf of the yitomim. And if you do go engage for that, then you're going to have to indemnify the yitomim, which means that if it's l'zchut, then fine. If it's the chov, we would not allow the yitomim to lose in that case, and therefore you'll have to back up the losses that are incurred in those instances. And therefore we won't let you engage in these matters. And if you do engage, you're taking a risk that you're going to have to pay for whatever deficits are created. That's the way Rashi describes it. Others describe it literally that we only allow you to engage for the yitomim in cases where there's risk to their assets. Somebody's making a claim against them, and then their risk to those assets, you're allowed to then defend them, but again, only the schot, but not the chov, that you have to do it for their benefit and not to their detriment, and if it goes against them, maybe you'll be held accountable. But in cases where they want to be toveya, or in cases where it doesn't involve losses for the yitomim, then we tell you to wait. Let it wait, and it'll be adjudicated with them once they get older, that the executor doesn't have to intervene. We only have the executor intervene when there's immediate loss or danger to their property or assets. There are others that read it literally here, that sometimes you have to make an expenditure in order to get a benefit. So sometimes you have to, say, pay a lawyer or hire a firm to do an assessment in order then to adjudicate the case. That would be something maybe that would be precluded from this, which is you're expending money that in the long run will have to be their benefit, but right now is an expenditure, is a chov, and that you may not do. Do a chov amanat liskot. Vein apitropim reshain limkor birachok vilago bikarov. He's not allowed to sell property that is far away in order to redeem property that is closer. Bira'a vilago biyafeh. Not to sell property that is not as good quality in order to redeem property that is of better quality. My taima. What is the reason here? It seems to be this would be to their benefit, to their zchut. Why shouldn't you be able to do this? Dilma mishtadfin. We worry about the fact that they may get flooded. Meaning that there is good property or better property, and there are reasons to upgrade the quality of the property, which is what he's doing here. He's bringing the property closer. He's getting better quality property. But there is a risk that the property or the land could be lost. It could be flooded. If something could happen to the land that would ruin it. And therefore, even though you're acting on their behalf to their benefit, there is this risk when you change the nature of the assets that the new asset might get lost. Nothing to do with you, not your fault, but we don't want you intervening. If you leave it alone and that happens, then it wasn't your fault. That was the nature of the assets that came in with the estate. And something happened, it's unfortunate, but you didn't cause the problem. If you switch out the assets and then something happens, we're going to blame you for that, or we're going to make you responsible for that. And therefore, you can't make these transactions. Vein apitropin reshayin limkor sadot, but likach avadim. He may not sell fields to buy servants. Aval mochrim avadim v'lochim ben sadot. But you can sell the servants in order to buy fields. The reason being is that there you're upgrading the asset. Avadim are more risky assets. They can be stolen. They can be taken away by the government. They could pass away. They could come sick. They could run away. So that asset is an asset that's at risk. Fields or land is considered to be the greatest stored value in their time. And therefore, that's a much safer asset and would be something that would last for the Yatomim or ensure that the value passed on to them. So therefore, you can sell an Eved in order to upgrade to a Sadeh, but not the reverse. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Af lo limkor avadim likach sadot. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says that's not true either. There's a risk in moving from avadim to sadot. My daima dilma lo mishafyan. Because there's a fear that they won't be so good, or the title to the field won't be so clean. And that means that people are going to come and make claims against the field, confiscate the property. The government could come in and confiscate the property. Even though maybe property has certain ma'alot in terms of being stored value, it's also a riskier asset from the perspective is that everybody wants land. Owning land is like the ultimate thing in their day. It's the ultimate vehicle for you to provide for your family and to have wealth and stored value. So if you move their assets into land, there's more chance that other people are going to come after this asset or take this asset away. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says it's also risky to move from Avadim to Karkaot. Ve'en apitropin rashayin lotzi Avadim l'cheirut. He cannot free slaves. Aval mochrim otam le'acherim. What he can do is sell them to third parties, monetize them. Ve'acherim otziyam atel l'cheirut. And then those other parties can free them. Rabbi Omer, again, we quoted this earlier in the Gemara to discuss the issues of freeing a slave. Can it be done through monetary means or does it need a get shechrur? Rabbi Omer ani, I say afu notein dmei atzmo. He can buy his own freedom. V'yotzei meishu kumo chrolo. It's the equivalent of selling him. What does it matter if you sell him to a third party or you sell him to himself? It should work just as well to sell him himself. V'tzarich l'chashevi mehen ba'achrona. This is what I mentioned in the Mishnah. Then in the end, the bottom line is, you have to give a cheshbon at the end, which as Rashi says over here, the takanata yitomim. This is part of that tikkun olam, that you must do a din and cheshbon afterwards, in order to show them la'achil or likach sadot, whatever it is that he did, to feed them, to buy fields, whatever happened with the estate, he's got to give a reckoning of the estate. Shimon Gamliel Omer, inu tzarich. Shimon Gamliel says you don't have to give a reckoning when you do these things. We assume that the apitropus is acting properly on behalf of the Yatomim, and that's why he was appointed to this position. Now, Rashi mentions over here, Bachrona, when it comes to the end, that he has to do a din in cheshbon, Rashi says over here, Kishi gadlu, yechashevi mahem. When they get older, he has to do an accounting with them. Bishavash lo nishar biyado klom. And then he has to take a shvuah that he didn't take anything for himself. So Rashi basically equates this machloket with the machloket basically of our Mishnah, which is, does he have to take a shvua on the back end, or does he not have to take a shvua on the back end? That's a machloket here. Many other Rishonim don't agree with Rashi, and that's the way that I explained it, is that it's not about a shvua, it's about a reckoning. Because otherwise, they're just creating the same machloket as the Mishnah, and the Gemara doesn't equate the two or mention the other machloket. The fact that the Gemara doesn't mention it seems that this machloket is different. That this machloket simply is about the accounting of the estate, nothing to do with the shvua. The shvua is a separate issue, which is discussed in the Mishnah, and we discuss later on in the daf, but this is simply about the reckoning or the accounting associated with the estate. Ein osim apitropin nashin vavadim v'ktanim. We don't make executors out of the following individuals, not women, not servants, slaves, and not ktanim. Rashi gives the reason behind each one of them. By the nashim, ein darkam latzeit v'lavo v'litroach. That they're not usually individuals involved in transactions. People get out into the business world, and therefore they're going to be handicapped in acting on behalf of the Yatomim, because they're limited in their abilities to benefit or transact on behalf of the Yatomim. Avadim, Rashi says, are inam ne'amanim. They're not trustworthy. That's the mission of Avot. Marbe avadim, person who has a lot of avadim, marbe gazel, has a lot of theft associated with them. Tanim are inam b'nei dat. They don't have the capacity or the knowledge or maturity to deal with these issues, and therefore they can't be an apitropus. V'im inam avia yitomim. If the father of the yitomim appointed these individuals to be an apitropus, whether that means that he put it in his tzava, or whether that is that he already appointed them before he died, to be an executor of the estate, harshut biado. He has a right to do that. It's his assets. He can make a decision as to who the apitropus is. And even though Beit Din has a right to intervene on behalf of the Yitomim to remove people who are inappropriate, these will not automatically be deemed inappropriate where Beit Din will intervene. If the father appointed them, then we'll let them work at it as long as it seems that they're doing a good job. Right now we have some case law, some stories about apitropum. Apitropus, dava b'shivutei, the Rabbi Meir. There was this executor, guardian of Yitomim in the neighborhood of Rabbi Meir. He was selling land, v'zabin avde, and buying avadim. V'loshavke Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Meir did not allow it. He denied him the right to do it. He blocked these sales and purchases. Achvule b'chalme, he had a dream. Rabbi Meir gets a dream. Ani l'haros v'talivnot. I to destroy and you to build. Which means that Hashem is speaking to him, which is, I'm trying to get rid of these assets, or basically cause losses to the estate of the Yitomim. And meantime, you are protecting them. Or in other words, you're undermining Hashem's plan. For whatever reason, Hashem here wants to remove these assets, whether they were stolen, whether they were inappropriately attained by the father, and now he wants to rid the Yitomim of this, or for whatever reason, Hashem wants the assets to be wasted away. Rabbi Meir, by preventing this apitropus in acting this manner, is stopping that from happening. Because that's what the Braita tells us, that you're not allowed to sell land to purchase a vadim. So Rabbi Meir, al pi halacha, says you can't do that. Meantime, Hashem in the dream tells him, you're blocking my plan. Afilo achi lo ashkach. Even after the dream, Rabbi Meir ignored it. Amar divrei chalomot lo ma'alin velo moridin. When it comes to dreams, they don't change the halacha. It's one thing to be choshesh for a dream. If you have a bad dream, so then you do a tanit chalom. If you have a dream about a nidoy, so then you have to get a tarat nidoy. But that's all where the nidoy involves isur, or something to be choshesh for. Over here, where the dream is trying to undermine a tikkun of the rabbonon, a takana that they established for the protection of the yatomim, we're not going to allow the chalom to override or change the halacha. And therefore Rabbi Meir ignored the dream. Hanu Beitre, the Igre Behu Satan. There were these two individuals who the Satan used to provoke or instigate them to Chol Be Shimche Havukaminsu Bahadeh Adodi. They caused them to have discord, altercations every Erev Shabbat. And so their house was a noisy, angry, difficult place every Erev Shabbat, because the Satan basically was getting involved and instigating. Iklu Rabbi Meir Lahotam. Rabbi Meir showed up there. Akvinhu Tlata Beis Shimshe. For three Arve Shabbatot, Rabbi Meir was there and intervened to stop the quarrels from going on, to prevent this type of discord. Ad Davaduhu Shalma. And after three times is considered to be a chazakah, but he made peace between them. And whether this is a husband and wife, whether this is neighbors, it's not clear here from the story. But whatever it is, Rabbi Meir intervened to the point where he brought them to a peaceful resolution or stopped this fighting that happened every Shabbat. Shamei dekamar, he overheard the Satan saying, Vai da'afki Rabbi Meir lau gavra mi beite. What was to this gentleman who Rabbi Meir threw out of his house? I mean that the Satan was parking there. That's where he was hanging out, because that's where all the quarrels and discord were happening. Now that Rabbi Meir made it peaceful, the Satan didn't have any place to go. He kicked him out of the house. Again, Rabbi Meir here acting against what's going on in the spiritual realms, acting against the Satan. And before, he was acting against this plan to waste away or whittle away the assets of the Yitomim. Okay, another story. There was this guardian executor in the neighborhood of Rabbi Shuben Levi. He was selling land, Vizabin Tore, and purchasing oxen. Velo amar le velo mide. And he didn't say anything to him. He didn't stop him. Now this would seem to be even more problematic. In the case of selling land and buying servants, we said no way. Now here you're selling land and buying shvarim, which seemed to be even a drop lower than avadim, and he's allowing him to do this. Sava like Rabbi Yossi. That's because Rabbi Shuben Levi holds like Rabbi Yossi. The Tanya. Amar Rabbi Yossi, miyamai lo kariti li shti shti. I never called my wife, my wife, ulushari shari, and my ox, Ella, li shti beiti. I called my wife, the house, Ulishari Sadi. And my oxen, I would call them the field. In essence, what Rabbi Yossi is saying is, these individuals or these items are not inherently just his wife. His wife is the Akeret Abayit. She is the one who makes the household. As Rashi says, Shekol Tzarchei Abayit Al Yada Nasim, V'hi Ikar Abayit. Everything is done by her. She runs the house. And therefore, the house is the wife, meaning that they are synonymous. It's not just simply his wife. His wife is also synonymous with his whole household and the house itself. She has a huge job, and she is the CEO of the family of the house, and therefore he called this Ishti Beiti. And the same is true with the shore. The field is only as good as the working oxen that can plow the field and help to work the field. If you don't have the oxen to work the field and to plow the field, then you're not going to do anything with the field. The field is worthless. And therefore, the oxen become the primary actors in the field. And in essence, the shore is the field. They're synonymous with the field. So therefore, in terms of equation of equality, he's saying shore and sadeh are synonymous. Since they are synonymous, if he's selling a field to buy a shore, then in essence, he's selling a field to buy a field. Based on this pidgam of Rabbi Yossi, which explains the uniqueness or specialness of the shore vis-a-vis the field. Now again, obviously this would only be a shore for working, not a shore for eating, because it's very particular to the sadeh and the work that he does on the sadeh. And that's why he allowed them to transact in that manner. Hanu yatme, davi smiche gabi ayisavto. There were these yitomim who were relying on this savto. It seems to be an older woman, or whether it was a grandmother. Havalu torta, they had shvarim, shakla vezavinta nialayu. She went ahead and sold it on their behalf. So here you have, number one, an apitropus who was not appointed. The word smuchim comes from our Mishnah. You can see, yitomim shesamchu. This is that they were relying on this individual, whether they had a relationship and they went to her, or she voluntarily took care of these yitomim. Nevertheless, she wasn't an officially appointed apitropos, but here she's exercising a right as an executor to sell some of the assets of the yitomim. Adu grovim the kamei the Rav Nachman. The relatives came to Rav Nachman to protest. Amrulei ma'vita dezavno. They said to him, what's she doing? She's selling their property. What right does she have to sell their property? Amrulehu, he quotes them our Mishnah, yitomim shesamchu etzel balabayit, it's none. That's our Mishnah, which says that if they are relying on her, if they are living by her, then that person gets rights like an apitropos, and she can sell on their behalf. Vayakir. So what about the fact that it went up in value? I mean, after they sold the shore, it went up in value, so she really transacted inappropriately on their behalf because she lost their money. Birshuta de lokeach yakir. It is in the hands of the buyer, it went up in value. He says, once they've sold it, you can't do anything about it. The value or the additional value, she didn't steal from them. She sold it at market value when she sold it. And then the lokeach, the buyer, took the risk. He got the appreciation. But she didn't receive any money for it yet. It was sold, whether it was on credit or it was sold with a kinyan mishicha, but the money didn't exchange hands yet. Then that is subject to a ruling here of Amoraim, which is Amar Rabbi Chananai Bar Idi Amar Shmuel, Nechsei Yitomim Harein Kehekdesh. When it comes to the property of the Yitomim, they have the same din of Hekdesh, Velo Maknei Ela Bekaspo. And therefore there's no full kinyan until the money is actually paid or exchanged hands. So normally, when you have a transaction between individuals, a kinyan mishicha would solidify the transaction, and the two parties then would be responsible for each of their sides. And if it went up in value, the buyer would get that value. But here, what the Chachamim did with the Yitomim is said that they have the same din as Hekdesh, which is only money will be the finalization of the transaction. And therefore, even if there was a kinyan mishicha done, if it went up in value, that value accretes to the Yitomim because the transaction wasn't completed. Now, there is something to know about this from the Gemara and Baba Metzia, which will be important to the remainder of the sugya here, which is, generally, we believe, at least according to Rabbi Yochanan, that ma'ot konot divrei Torah. That min ha-Torah, money is the way to acquire metaltalim, There is a dissenting opinion there, Reish Lakish, who says that ma'ot are not konot min haTorah, but Rabbi Yochanan says they are konot, but the Chachamim instituted a kinyan mishicha. They instituted that you have to do a kinyan mishicha. Why? Because they were fearful of a situation in which the person purchased an item and did not take possession of it. So, for instance, they buy a storehouse full of grain, they pay the money, and now they own it. Meantime, that storehouse is still found by the seller. A fire breaks out in the seller's house, and it's going to catch the storehouse. What's his incentive to protect the storehouse at that point? Nothing. He says to the buyer, Chiteich nisrufu ba'aliyah. Your produce burnt up. I couldn't do anything about it. I didn't do anything about it, but it was your stuff, so I don't worry about it. So in order to prevent that type of situation, the Chachamim said that kinyanim would only be done through kinyan mishicha, which assures that the individual purchasing the item actually has possession of the item. So what the Chachamim said is that when it comes to transactions with Yitomim, that it relies on the monetary side, the money side. Now we're going to see then, if that's true, it could turn out to be to the detriment of the Yitomim. So that's what the Gemara is going to address soon, which is that it's only beneficial sometimes to have money as being the acquiring vehicle. But as we see now, the example that I'm telling you, that it's not always for their benefit. That's both if, first of all, the prices go down, or in the case where something happens to the item before the money changes hands. So there are reasons to protect the Yitomim in this case, and that's what the Gemara will discuss in a minute. Chamrei deRabbanu ukva yatma. So there was wine, barrels of wine, of this individual, Rabbanu ukva, who was a Yatom. Mashchua ba'arba arba. They made a kinyan mishicha to purchase it at 4 per barrel. V'yakir, prices went up. V'kam b'shita b'shita. They went up to 6 per barrel. Atu l'kamei d'Rav Nachman. They came before Rav Nachman. Amar l'hu, haynu d'Rav Chaninai b'aidi, amar Shmuel. This is exactly that case. D'Rav Rav Chaninai b'aidi, amar Shmuel. Nechsei yitomim, arayin kekdesh, v'lo maknin elu b'kaspo. And therefore, so there's no kinyan until the money exchanges hands. That accretion in value now will accrue to the Yitomim, because there was no kesef. The money didn't exchange hands yet. Since the money didn't change hands and it went up in price, the value will accrue to them. Now, the Gemara here now explains, and what we had discussed before, how does this exactly work? Meshoch peirot miyatme. Someone who does a kinyan mishicha from the peirot of the Yitomim. Iyakor, if they go up in value, haynu d'Rav Chaninai b'aidi amar Shmuel. That's the case where they say that only once the kesef changes hands is it fully bought. And if it goes up in value, the Yitomim will get the benefit of that value. Zol, if it goes down in value, we said before, there could be to the detriment of the Yitomim, which is that if you say that it's not finalized until money changes, and then it goes down in value, that benefit will not accrue to the Yitomim, but rather to the buyer. But so that's what the Gemara says here. It's not equal on both sides. Zol, if it depreciates, lo yekoach hejot chamor megdesh, then the power of the hejot can't be weaker or more stringent than hekdesh, which means that you get the benefit of both sides. Just like hekdesh doesn't lose in these situations, so to the Yitomim will not lose in these situations. That's what it means. Yadam ala yona, which means that the koach hejot won't be more chamor than hekdesh, meaning that if the hejot is given the benefit of a kinyan mishicha, hekdesh is also given the benefit of a kinyan mishicha when it's to their benefit. And so to the Yitomim will be given that benefit. Which is that if you make a kinyan, you'll get the benefit of a kinyan, the prices drop. If prices go up, we'll say you have to wait for the kesef. So you'll get the benefits of both sides, or you always have the upper hand. We'll say that it's a kinyan kesef is necessary when the prices go up. We will say that a kinyan mishicha is sufficient when prices go down. So meaning that we'll make you like a hedjot when prices drop, and kinyan mishicha will be enough. And we'll make you like hekdesh when prices go up, that kinyan kesef is necessary. That's in the case where they are purchasing from the Yitomim. On the other hand, the other way around, imshichulu pere diatme, if the Yitomim are the buyers, so they did a kinyan mishicha and a purchase, iyakir, if the price goes up, lo ye koach hejot chamor mehekdesh. Again over here, the koach hejot shouldn't be more chamor than the hekdesh, and therefore the acquisition is done. The mishicha was sufficient to buy it, and now that the price went up, the Yitomim don't have to pay the higher price. They already acquired the item, even though they didn't pay for it yet. So, if it went down in price, savur mina, I know Rabbi Chanina lai baridi amar Shmuel. So then, if it goes down in price, he thought, well, that's that shita, that kesef, is the determinant item, and therefore it goes down in price, they can unwind the transaction or buy it for the lower price because the money didn't exchange hands yet. They didn't pay for it yet. That will turn out to be to their detriment. Even though right now it looks good, it's not going to look good in the long run. Sometimes they need food and they need to purchase it. Nobody will sell them on credit anymore. No one will sell them with just a kinya mishicha until you pay money, because they want the transaction to go through, and they're not going to do it unless you put up the cash so that the transaction is done. So that actually works out to their disadvantage, which is, even though, yes, it's advantageous to give them the upper hand in all transactions, what you're actually going to do is close down the market to them, because people will no longer extend them credit, and they're going to have to pay cash for everything. And that's going to make it more difficult for them. So now we move on to the next. Yayiv yatmei zuzei apeiret. If the Yatomim purchased payrot, he didn't do a kinyan mishicha. It's the opposite of the case before. The case before, he did a kinyan mishicha without paying the money. Zol, if it goes down in price, they should be no worse than a hedyot. There was no kinyan mishicha over here. Therefore, the transaction's not sealed, and they should be able to garner the lower price. So if it goes down in price, it's their benefit to unwind the transaction. And therefore, we'll say the lack of mishicha, lack of kinyan mishicha over here allows them to renegotiate the price. Yakir, prices go up. So Ramina Ainu Drabi Khaninai Bar Yib Amar Shmuel. And this should be like that statement before, which is the fact that money is the closing of a transaction for the Yatomim, that cash is king for the Yatomim, and this should have locked the price so that now when the price goes up, they don't have to pay the higher price. Amalo Rav Shesha Bradidi, Harahi Lididhu. Once again, this is to their detriment. In the near term, it's to their benefit. But in the long term, it's not to their benefit. This is exactly why there's an institution of kinyan mishicha, is so that you don't have this problem. Now, if we allow the yitomim to garner the benefit of it being a cash transaction, which means when it goes up in value, that the transaction is closed and they bought it already. When it goes down in value, they can unwind it. So in that instance, when it goes up in value, the Yatomim are basically going to say, I'm locked. I paid cash and I'm locked in. The only problem is that the produce is still sitting with the mocher, with the seller. A fire breaks out, something happens, and the produce goes to waste. In that case, he's going to say, that was yours. Too bad. You're on the hook for it, and the Yatomim will lose out because the seller will not have an incentive to take care of the item, because Rashi over here explains the reason why, or basically he says it's a tarte de satre. You can't have both. You can't have it that we make the mocher responsible for the property, yet if the price goes up, he's locked into the deal. You can't have it both ways. And that's what Rashi says here. Kaven delinyan chazara la bershut mocher hu. Since for the reversal of the transaction, it's not in the hands of the seller. It can't be in his possession for responsibility. You can't make him a responsible party for the item and then say to him they can back out of the transaction. It's either or. Either he's responsible for the item and they can't back out of the transaction, or he is not responsible and they can back out of the transaction. You can't have it both ways. And therefore, by a hedjot, that's why we left it in the possession of the mocher until there's a kinyan mishicha. Even though you did kesef and the kinyan should have been done, nevertheless, we leave it with the mocher because we want him to be responsible for it. Well, if he's responsible for it, he also gets the benefit of the price changes, meaning that he can back out of the transaction because the transaction is not sealed until the kinyan mishicha is done. So that's what the Rav Shisha Bered Ravidi is saying over here. This is not going to turn out to be their benefit. Even though now it looks good, it's going to turn out in the long run that they're going to get hurt by such a setup. So you have to look at the long-term impact of this. And that's why we don't want this to happen, and therefore we won't give that privilege to the Yatomim, because it'll turn out to be their detriment in the long run. Tosafot over here discusses in the case where there was a kinyan mishicha done by the buyer, and the price went up. In that case, that was the case where Rav Nachman Paskin, in favor of Yatomim, that value accretion will accrue to the Yatomim, and that on the name of the Nisru Chitchem Ba'aliyah. In that case, he's going to say, that was yours, too bad. You're on the hook for it, and the Yatomim will lose out, because why would the Lokhim, why would the purchaser be responsible? Rashi says is because they have the benefits of the item going up and down in price. They can back out of the transaction. So therefore, they're responsible.
So in that first scenario where the buyers have done a kinyan mishicha, but the yitomim still hold the right to reverse the transaction, based on Rashi over here, it means that the yitomim should be responsible for it. Meantime, it's sitting in the possession of the lokeach, and he's going to say that if it gets destroyed or anything happens to it, that's your problem because you still own it. So Tosafot says that's not the case there, because there it's different because the lokeach has already taken the object into his possession. And because he took it into his possession, there's therefore obligations that derive from that benefit.
He says, V'yesh lamar, denasim alukhim shomrei sachar, that the buyers become shomrei sachar, kevin yecholim lochlam, lasot behem kol chepzam, since they are permitted to eat them, and to do as they please with them, that's what generates their responsibility towards the item. I mean, the item is still in the possession of the mocher. So how can you say to the lokeach, you're responsible for it, you're on the hook for it? Why is that? The answer is, he becomes effectively a shomer sachar. What is the shomer sachar? Is the fact that he can eat them, take them when he wants. So there's certain hana'ot that come to him, accrue to him, that makes him into a shomer sachar and makes him responsible for the item. So that's why the lokeach, the buyer, is responsible here, and he will lose the money. Tells us what is explained, the vehicle by which the lokeach is going to lose his money when it's sitting in the possession of the lokeach after they purchased it. Why would the lokeim, why would the purchaser be responsible? It's as if they're being paid to watch it, and therefore they got to take care of it. And they have the responsibility for that item. Now the last case, which is Yalvelo Zuze Liyat Me'a Peire, they gave money to purchase peirot from the Yitomim. Iyakir, if the price goes up, lo yekoe hejot chomer mekdesh. Hekdesh should be no worse than the hejot where you need a kinyan mishicha to seal it. Since there was no kinyan mishicha over here, the deal should not be sealed, and therefore they could garner the higher price. Zol, if it goes down in value, savimina, I know the Rav Chaninai bar Idi Amar Shmuel, that cash locks the deal, and therefore the price goes down, the sale is a sale, and the buyer has to pay the higher price to the Yitomim. Again, always accruing to the benefit of the Yitomim. Amar Rav Shisha bar Idi Rav Idi, again, hara hu ledidu. That turns out in the long run to be to their detriment. The zimine de matzricha le zuze. Sometimes they need cash immediately. The lucky of the ayvelu ad the ayvelu peyre. And people will not give it to them until they hand the payroll over. Meaning that in the past, people might have paid them up front and then taken the mishicha or taken the payroll in the back end because they knew that the deal was sealed at that point. But now if you say that they can unwind the deal after the cash is given, the person is saying, I'm not giving you cash until you hand me the payroll, so I know that the deal is done. That will work to their detriment because now people will not pay them up front when they need cash right away. They'll have to get delivery before they will pay cash. And that will work against them. So now, basically, what you've concluded here is you have four possible scenarios here, which is where the Yitomim are buying something, where the Yitomim are selling something, and in both those cases, there was only a kinyan mishicha. And another case where the Yitomim are buying or selling something, and the only thing that was done was the cash transaction, no mishicha. So you have four cases over here. In three of those cases, Rav Shisha Brei de Ravidi says that it'll be to their detriment, because they might sometimes need cash, they might sometimes need to purchase something quickly, and don't have the cash, and they need a credit extended to them, or there is a possibility that the item might still be in possession of the mocher, and something will happen to it, and the mocher will not do anything about it because it's in the Yitomim's possession. For all three of those reasons, three out of those four cases, we say that the Yitomim have the same din as a regular individual, and that means that either you say that it's a kinyan mishicha, or you say it's a kinyan kesef. It's got to be either one. Either they're working like hekdesh and kinyan kesef governs, or it's a kinyan mishicha, and that's both for the upside and the downside. And that's what the Tosafot Reed says over here, Nimtzach Shav, Shedin Yitomim Shaveh L'Shar Bnei Adam, that the din of Yitomim is equivalent to any other person, B'chol Davar, with everything chutz, for the one case, Shemashchu Acherim Mehen Belkiru, except in the case where there was a kinyan mishicha done by the buyer, and the price went up. In that case, that was the case where Rav Nachman Paskin, in favor of Yitomim, that value accretion will accrue to the Yitomim, and they will be the beneficiaries of that, even though technically a kinyan mishicha for Hejot would have sealed the deal. Nevertheless, for the Yitomim, we give them that extra right that if the cash hasn't exchanged hands, that they get to keep that extra value. But that'd be the one case where it's only beneficial to them and there's really no detriment that comes out of it, then we will say that they have that right of best price, which is that they can stay in the transaction if it's to their benefit, or they can unwind the transaction if it's not to their benefit. But that's only one out of the four cases. In a case where the Yitomim sold an object and the only thing that done by the buyer was a kinyan mishicha. Now, Tosafot here does raise an issue with regards to the monetary transactions, which is, even though we believe that you need a kinyan mishicha in order to finalize the deal, nevertheless, if someone already paid cash in the deal, even though technically you can unwind it, either because ma'ot are not konot, or according to Rabbi Yochanan, even though ma'ot are konot, the kinyan mishicha, the din d'rabbanan, overrode that and said you need a kinyan mishicha, nevertheless, there is a concept in the Mishnah, but Matziah Mishapora, that was a curse. The one who took retribution on Anshei Sdom and Anshei Dor HaMabul should take retribution on people who back out of transactions or do not stand by their word. So even though there's a necessity for Kinyan Mishicha, once money changes hands, we assume that a person should not back out of the deal. Even though he has the right to back out of the deal, if he does back out of the deal, he's subject to that curse of not standing by his word. So Tosafot says, what happens to that over here? Even Hekdesh can't back out of transactions because they should also be subject to Misha Para, meaning that you're giving them the benefit of being like a Hedyot. Well, if you're giving them the benefit of being like a Hedyot, the Hedyot is still subject to Misha Para, which is this curse if you don't stand by your word, even though there was no Kinyan Mishicha done. So what Tosafot answers is, V'ishlamar dehotam kani kesef midoraito. That over there, the Kinyan Kesef works mina Torah. And therefore there's no problem. So what Tosafot distinguishes between Hekdesh and Yitomim in the end is that Hekdesh really does acquire Mina Torah with money. And since they acquire with money, they are subject to Misha Para the same way that a Hejot would be subject to Misha Para. On the other hand, Yitomim do not have a din of Hekdesh. The Chachamim granted them the right, like Hekdesh, that their money should transact or be the finalization of the Kinyan, like Hekdesh, but it's all an imposition or institution, the Rabbonon. So that institution, the Rabbonon, is not like a classic transaction where the Kinyan is a full-fledged Kinyan, and that's why you're subject to Misha Parah. Over here by the Yitomim, money does nothing, just like it does nothing by a Hejot. And therefore, you are not subject to Misha Parah over here, or that curse of not standing by your word, because in truth, midoraita, the money did nothing. And it's only because of the Kinyan Mishicha that the transaction would be sealed. Chachamim empowered them that money becomes an issue, but that empowerment, the Chachamim, also gave them the right to back out of the transaction. That's why they're not subject to that curse for not standing by their word. Amar Rav Ashi, Anav Rav Chanhana, Chatmina Nashtora de Ime de Zeira Yatma. We signed on the contracts of the mother of Zeira, the Yatom, the Mizavna Ara the Karga, because she was selling land to pay Karga, Bloach Razita, without a auction. Damar Nardai, because the Nardai say, the Karga, the Mizone Lukvura, for the poll tax, for Mizonot, for food, basic necessities. And for burial, mizavninan below achrazta. You're allowed to sell the assets of the Yitomim without a full-fledged auction. Meaning that auctions take time, and even though you might garner a higher price, the need for expediency over here is so important that we'd rather you sell without an auction in order to protect the Yitomim rather than wait for the auction to garner the higher price. And those are these cases here. Karga, as Rashi says over here, diyatme, of the Yitomim themselves, if you say karga diyatme, in order to pay the government officials the poll tax, whether that is a head tax or whether that is a land tax, v'zavna b'loach rasta, ipnei shegavaya melech nachutz, the tax collectors, the government official, don't wait. And if you don't show up with the money, they might confiscate the property, they might fine you, you have to deal with it immediately. And that is true by all of these items over here, whether it's for the mizonot of the Yitomim, whether it's for the kvura of the Yitomim. These are things that need are time sensitive, and therefore we allow you to sell it without an auction. Tosfot over here disagrees with the Rashi and says that this is not for the benefit of the Yitomim. Because Tosfot says for the benefit of the Yitomim, you don't need an auction for many items, not just these items. The fact that these items are noted in particular or have a special rule is because these aren't dealing with the Yitomim themselves, but rather, l'chach nira da'achem b'kargo mezonot kvurat di'isha ubanot. It is for the widow and the daughters that were left behind. The owners of the estate are the Yitomim, and the apitropos is acting on their behalf. For the benefit of the widow and the benefit of the daughters, in these certain cases, we allowed the apitropos to act on behalf of those individuals to sell the land quickly and to provide the cash that's needed to take care of them, even though it may to be to the detriment of the Yitomim. Generally, we won't let you benefit the widow or the banot at the expense of the Yitomim, and we'll force you to do an auction. But here, where the expedience is very important, we allowed you to do something that might be the detriment of the Yitomim for the benefit of the family, which is the widow and the banot. And that's what Tosafot says is the uniqueness of these three items, which allow you to do something to the detriment of the Yitomim. Okay, now the Gemara continues with another story. Amram Tzavo Apotropo Diyat Me'avo. This individual was a guardian executor for the Yitomim. Atu Krovim Lekame de Rav Nachman. Krovim came before Rav Nachman. We know that Rav Nachman is a big dayan. We see here numerous cases of this nature coming before Rav Nachman. Amrlei Kalovish Umikse Miyatme. This executor, this guardian, is getting dressed in nice clothing and basically purchasing for himself a nice wardrobe at the expense of the Yitomim, that is using their money to dress himself. Amalohu, that's okay. Kiechi delishtaman mile. He is acting as an agent on their behalf, and he needs to look good. He needs to have a nice appearance, be presentable, and therefore it's to the benefit of the Yitomim that he dresses nicely so that he can be their representative and that he can be in dealings on their behalf. Ka'achil v'shati mididhu v'lo amud. He is eating and drinking from the estate, and he is not, Rashi over here says, amid, he is not wealthy. Meaning that he doesn't have the wherewithal to make these expenditures, so he's clearly doing it out of the estate, and not from his own assets. And Rashi gives an explanation for why amud is an expression for an ashir, whether it's when people are wealthy, other people are always trying to assess what he has and what his value is. That would be the expression of omdo. Or amid means a sheer, that he doesn't have the assets or the wherewithal to make these expenditures. Imur mitzia eshkach, who says that he's doing it out of the estate. Maybe he had a lucky day, found some money or found an object, and now he has money to spend. And that's why he's eating and drinking better. Baka mafsit, he's causing them losses on the estate. Amalu, aitali sade de mafsit. Bring me a deem, bring me evidence that he's causing losses. Ve'asil kine, and I will remove him. So here, you first of all see the right of Beit Din to remove an apitropos when he's causing losses. Damar ravuna chavrin mishmeid rav apitropos de mafsit misalkin le. Because we have a misora that Ravuna Chavrin tells us in the name of Rav that an apitropos who is acting inappropriately, causing losses to the estate or to the Yitomim, we remove him. Ditmar, we have a mamar of Amoraim, apitropos de Masid, and apitropos is causing losses, Ravuna Marav Misalkin and Lay, that's what we just quoted over here, that Ravuna in the name of Rav tells us that you remove such an individual, Ve'rav Shila Amrei, lo Misalkin and Lay, and the Beit Rav Shila says, we do not remove him. Behilchato, and the loche is misalkinanle, that we do remove him. Over here, the Rishonim take different approaches to this. The Ramban, for instance, says that where that Rav Nachman only demanded a deem in a case where the father appointed the apitropos. Because over there, we assume that the father really wanted this individual to be the apitropos, and therefore he appointed him. So the only way we're going to remove him or Beit Din's going to intervene is if we have evidence through a deem that he's causing losses. On the other hand, if he's a Beit Din appointed apitropos, Beit Din might more readily be willing to remove Sapajaj and Apitropos because he's acting on behalf of Beit Din. And even without Edim, if it's known that he's causing losses, they'll remove him and put someone else in place, because they're not overriding the appointment of the father. They're simply acting as Beit Din did to appoint another shliach on their behalf.
Well, others believe that in either case, you need stronger evidence to remove this individual. Since he was appointed by either the father or the Beit Din, that you need good evidence that he is misbehaving in order to remove him as the executor or guardian of the estate.
That's number one. Number two is that if the father appoints such an individual to be an apitropos, that individual cannot pass that obligation or right to someone else. Either he does it, or if he's unwilling to do it, he has to go to Beit Din and allow Beit Din to intervene and take care of it. But what he can't do is just hand this over and make someone else's shliach to be the apitropos of the estate. The other thing is that a person has a right to back out of the being an apitropos as long as they have yet to accept the position or begin to deal with the estate. Once they've already accepted the position or begun to deal with the estate, then they can't back out of it until they get a replacement, meaning until Beit Din comes along and provides a replacement for that individual. Because once you've engaged, you're now obligated to carry out those tasks unless you are relieved of those tasks. Now, when they are misalekim, when they remove him, the assumption here is according to all dayot, he would have to take a shvuah. Because there's suspicion here of malpractice and theft, therefore, we would demand that when he is removed from this position, that he take a shvuah. You can see that in the Tosafot Drid, Vamrinan Ravuta, Migo de Misalkinanle, Mashbinanle. Now that we remove him, we force him to take a shvuah. Now, what the responsibility of an individual who is posheya with the items of the Yatomim or is causing losses to the estate, over here the Tosafot brings, V'omoyer Rabbeinu Chaim, Delo Mechayvin Apitropo Lishava, Edelo Yikev Klum Mishalehem. The only part of his shvuah that he has to take is that he didn't hold anything back. Abalo Mishtava Shlo Pasha. He doesn't have to take a shvuah that he was not posheya. Because even if he was a posheya, he is patur. Because even if he did something wrong and he was a posheya, he's not held accountable. He's not personally responsible for those losses that are caused to the Yatomim. And that might be some of what Beit Rabbi Shila says, that we don't remove him even though he's causing some losses. The assumption here that the losses are caused by his transacting or trying to do something or investments on behalf of the Yatomim that don't work out, but not that he's posheya. Over here, Tosafot, according to Rabbeinu Chaim, opens up the possibility that even if he's posheya, he would be patur, and then maybe even then, he wouldn't be misalekim unless there were serious issues of him stealing from the Yatomim. On the other hand, Harav Rabbi Shlomo Bar Yosef, Mevardon, Tosafot says, that when it comes to the apitropos, that he's personally liable for any losses that accrue to the Yatomim. And he would have to pay out of pocket for that. Even though, in a sense, he's doing a favor by being the executor to the estate. Nevertheless, we consider him to be like a Shomer Sachar, as we're going to see in the upcoming Gemara. And she's a Shomer Sachar, he's on the hook for anything that goes wrong and for all responsibilities with regards to the value of the estate. Okay, now the Gemara continues. Apitrovo Shumniu Avi Yatomim Yishava. My daima. What's the reason behind the Tanakama's position? It wasn't for the fact that this individual owed something to the father, he would not have become an apitropos, meaning that there is some sort of IOU in here, and he's paying it back by being the apitropos. And just because he has to take a shvuah would not prevent him from taking on this position, because he feels indebted to this individual, and that's why he is acting as the guardian, the executor of the estate, because of that indebtedness, or he owes the individual something, and that will not be overridden by the fact that he has to take a shvuah. So if we demand a shvuah, that won't prevent him from taking on this position. On the other hand, if Beit Din appoints him, he doesn't have to take a shvuah according to the Tanakama. Milto ba'amahu da'ovi the Beit Dina. He's just doing a favor for Beit Din. Vi ramit alei shvuah. If you now force him to take a shvuah, atalei amnuye, then he will demur from taking this position. Here, this person is acting in a pro bono manner on behalf of the court to take care of these yitomim.
if you add any burdens on top of him, he's not going to do it. So if you demand a shvua, he's going to say, no, thank you, I don't want to do this. And that's the reasoning behind the Tanna Kamma. Whereas those that say that when it's an appointment by the father, he has to take a shvua because the father's less careful about who he appoints. He has personal motives. He has other reasons to appoint the individual. Whereas a person that's appointed by the Beit Din is vetted carefully by the Beit Din, and therefore there's less reason to suspect them in the back end because Beit Din already vetted who the individual was, and therefore is less likely to take a shvua. Abba Shaul omer chiluf dvarim. Abba Shaul says just the opposite. My taima. Minua Beit Din yishava. What's the reason that if Beit Din appoints him, he should take a shvua? The fact that now his name becomes synonymous with reliability, believability, because Beit Din appointed this individual to be the executor, Beit Din relies on this individual, that gives him a standing with other individuals, whether in business transactions or whether in his social standing. So therefore, Mishum Shvua lo atalim nuye. Just because he has to take a shvua, he will not forego that honor and prestige that comes with being a apitropos appointed by Beit Din, and therefore the shvua will not be a deterrent from him accepting the position. Minio avi yitomim lo yishava. On the other hand, if the father of the yitomim appointed this individual, he doesn't take a shvua. Milta b'amadu davde la adodi. This is kind of a friendship. Something that you do for a friend, it's not something that he owes him. It's not because he's indebted to him in any way. Just a nice thing to do for your friend. But if that's the case, you only do it if it's not too much trouble. Im ramit alei shvua, if you put a shvua on him on the back end, ate liam nuye, then he will be deterred from accepting such a position because he doesn't want to be bothered. He's doing this as a favor. If you're going to make him take a shvua, he'll no longer do that favor. Amar Rav Chanan bar Ami, Amar Shmuel, Hilchotok Abba Shaul. So here we have a member from the Amoraim that says the Locha is like Abba Shaul. Tanya, Belezim and Yaakov Omer, Ze v'ze yishava. Belezim and Yaakov says that they both should take a Shvua, meaning that he is a third opinion now, not like the Tanna Kamma, not like Abba Shaul, but both instances, whether appointed by Beit Din or whether appointed by the father, we say that he has to take a shvua. V'alocha kidvarav. And the locha is like what he says. Now, Tosafot over here points out that despite the fact that we have a principle that the Mishnayot of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov are kav v'naki, and therefore we paskin like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov anytime he's found in a Mishnah or a Braita, nevertheless over here, the locha is not like him. Even though the Braita itself says, the reason that for that being is because the Tosafot would read explains over here the Apagav the Kaimelan Mishnah Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Kavanaki Valacha Kamoto B'chol Makom Hanimile Heichid Lo Paski Amorai Hilchata. That's only when we are following Klalei Psak and we don't have an explicit Psak from the Gemara. Over here we have an explicit Psak from the Amoraim that the Locha is like Abba Shaul Neged Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. And va'afagav d'tanya v'alocha k'dvarav, and even though the Braita says alocha k'dvarav, ha'kaimelon ein lemedim alocha mi'pi ha'mishnah. We don't learn alocha out of a mishnah, because the Tana who wrote the mishnah obviously favored that opinion, and therefore when you have alocha in the mishnah, that is not determinative in terms of the halacha. And therefore, we are someich on the psak of the Amoraim here, that the alocha is like Abba Shaul. And that means that if he is appointed by Beit Din, he has to take a shvua. If he's appointed by the father, he does not have to take a shvua. And that's what the Tosafot Reed says over here, that the only reason we don't make him take a shvua is Ketav Rav Yitzchak Zal V'hani Mila V'tanat Shema. We do not make him take a shvua when there's a Tanat Shema. Maybe he did something wrong. Maybe there's something missing. Aval B'tanat Bari Mashbi'in Lei. If there is a definitive claim against the executor and guardian of the estate, even if he was appointed by the father, we would make him take a shvua in that case. And then we go back to Tosafot, who discusses whether a guardian or apitropos is held responsible for pshia, and whether the shvua at the end of his term, when he hands the assets back to the yitomim, does that shvua simply a lo shalachti yad, that I did not take anything or benefit from the estate? Or does he also have to take a shvua, including the shvua that he's lo pasha, that he did not do anything intentionally wrong or was negligent in taking care of the assets? And that would depend on whether you think he is responsible for pshia. According to the Rabbeinu Chaim, when you're not chayav pshia, you don't have to take a shvua about it. On the other hand, according to Rabbi Shlomo Bar Yosef Mivardon, since you're chayav for the pshia, you also have to take a shvua that you were not posheya. And Tosafot in the end says that gabe shvua dafka plige, the only machloket here between the Tanakam and Abba Shol is about the shvua. That according to everybody, if you are pusheya, you have to pay for it. But without any evidence, we won't force him to take a shvua about the pshia unless there's evidence to the fact that he was pusheya. So what you see here is a balance between these items. That first of all, if Ispi is pusheya, he's responsible for it. If there are suspicions of pshia, we will make him take a shvua. But if things are running normally and there's no suspicions of pshia over here, we won't force him to take a shvua because there's no reason for us to believe that he did anything wrong or was negligent with the assets. So you need articulable suspicion in order to force a shvua on the pshia. And again, if there is evidence of pshia, he will be responsible to pay for it. And as we mentioned again before, it seems that whether you paskin like Abba Shaul or not, or whether you require shvua or not, he still has to give an accounting of the estate when he returns it to the Yitomim, even if he doesn't have to take a shvua. Itani Rav Tachlifa Bar Marova Kamei de Rabbi Ba'u, Apitropos Shumneu Avi Yitomim, Ishava. Then an Apitropos that was appointed by the father takes a shvua, Mivnei Shehu Nosei Sachar, because he is paid for the job. Amalei At Aitid Kabo, Rabbi Bahu says back to Rabbi Tachlifa Bar Marova, you brought something that seemingly makes sense. You brought substance here, and then you used it up or you ruined it. Meaning that the first statement, which is that an apitropos who is appointed by the father should take a shvua, that is correct. But the fact that you said because he's a nosei sachar, because he was paid for the job, that's not necessarily true. And the two aren't necessarily correlated. Ela ema mipnei shehu kin nosei sachar. But rather you have to say, not that he's being paid for the job, but he is like a nosei sachar. And the reason being that the standing or the benefit that he enjoys from the being in this position is the equivalent of getting paid like a nosei sachar. And that's what obligates him here, both in the shvua. And according to the Ramban, that's also what it obligates him in the losses or the pshia that happens and that he has to repay the Yitomim. Because he is kin nosei sachar. Now the girsa that we have in the Gemara is shemino avia Yitomim, which would then be against the position of Abba Shaul. So therefore there are Rishonim who have the opposite girsa, which is shemineu beitin, that he has to take a shvua over here, because that would accord with Alocha being like Abba Shaul. And that means that if he was appointed by Beitin, he takes a shvua, whereas if he's appointed by the father, he does not have to take a shvua. As we said before, he still has to give an accounting no matter what. And according to most of the Rishonim, he will be on the hook for pshia, especially if there is suspicion of pshia, then he would also have to take a shvua regarding that pshia. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the bottom of Nun Bet Amud Bet.